Overdose off the ovation. Make a stand for the whole nation. Dressing room like the Old Bailey. 101 dogs and they ain't Dalmatians. Knock it on, take your money like a donation. But wipe the fika, that's the morals we was all raised with. Screwface can't save faces, they gonna be saving graces. At least of us saving.
Welcome, listeners, to another podcast with some very, very special guests on the Anti-Racist Educator podcast. I'm Hashim. And joined with me today is Sangeeta, fellow member of the Anti-Racist Educator Collective. And joining us are two very special people from across the border, down south, people doing incredible work on anti-racism. We have Maya and Fozia from the collective Kids of Colour. How's everyone doing?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yeah, it's so nice to have you here. I dropped the ball on the last time that we tried to do this, and everyone has very graciously been patient with me to do it again. So it's great because it's a really important episode, and it's something that we can really learn. Hoping to really learn loads and loads about the work that you guys have been doing down south to inform perhaps next steps for us up in Scotland. So to start off with, could you tell us a bit about the work that you do, and then maybe a bit about what Kids of Colour is and why it was formed.
Yeah, so I'm Fozia. I'm one of the project officers at Kids of Colour. And Kids of Colour originally started almost 3 years ago, it will be in February, as it's a community interest company that supports young people of colour that with racism. And it originally started off as that. It was starting a conversation and supporting young people that were dealing with racism in school, in their just kind of personal lives of existing. And it started off as just YouTube. And then very shortly after, kind of formed into challenging these systems that these young kids of colour were struggling with. So it kind of, the platform grew, and then it went to going into schools, being advocates for families, parents who were experiencing difficulties that their children were experiencing in schools, to then anti-racist workshops, and speaking at different events like the educational teaching conference, one that I spoke at. And then most recently, the No Policing in Schools campaign that we've been working on for the past few months, that's now been out for almost a month now, the report of decriminalizing the classroom. So my role in all of this is a lot to do with the No Policing in Schools campaign. We did a lot of sort of data collecting, going through the reports, being one of the sort of teachers in anti-racism workshops and speaking out. So it kind of like fluctuates throughout. But yeah, that's me.
Thanks. Yeah, I think we'll talk in more detail about that No Policing in Schools project. Because it's informing a bit of work that we think is really necessary here in Scotland, and we really want to learn from what you guys are doing down south.
Yeah.
Maya, could you tell us a bit more about just why Kids of Colour was formed? Because I think we know that in Scotland, we kind of came together as the anti-racist educator to address a kind of glaring absence in the teaching profession and in schools when it comes to talking about what is racism and the realities that racialized individuals face in schools and in their communities. So we try to address that kind of absence. Does Kids of Colour come from a kind of similar trajectory, what else is happening? And just to ask, are you guys based in Manchester, just to confirm? Yes, you are.
Yeah. So Kids of Colour is based in Manchester, but I'm currently not based in Manchester personally. So
I see.
Just doing everything online.
It was born in the Manchester area. Great. Could you tell us a bit more about, like why it was formed in the first place and what kind of gaps it is addressing?
The founder, Roxy Le Guin, basically realised that there weren't many platforms in which young people of colour were able to express the issues of like daily racism they were facing. So that's how me and Fosia originally got involved in the project, because it's a community interest project, so not a charity. Because we were two young people dealing with racism on a daily and not really having much of an outlet to express the grief we were essentially dealing with. And every single person of colour we've come into contact with who's been involved in the project has had pretty much exactly the same experience of feeling silenced, not being able to speak out about their experiences in, you know, the setting, the institutions that they're in, you know, whether that be in the workplace, in education, which is something that has continuously come up. Roxy essentially realised that it was really important that these kids now had this space to express themselves. And I think it's so important because very rarely are people of colour's experiences validated. And, you know, if that's something that's primary to your existence and your experience day to day, I think it's really important that you're given the space to express without judgment or without fear as well.
Mm-hmm. So is it primarily spaces run by people of colour for people of colour?
Yeah, so that's what we try and, that's sort of the space that we try and create. So obviously anyone is welcome to come to workshops, and we do encourage everyone to get involved. So not just people of colour, but to have white allies as well. But we do want to always stick to the principle that is people of colour creating these spaces, because I think otherwise the message gets lost a bit in terms of it being a space in which people of colour can truly feel free to express the things that they're dealing with.
Yeah, and you can use, there's so much more potential in creating the kind of momentum behind the campaign that we're going to talk a bit more about, and that you're free from kind of logics that might have held back previous anti-racist campaigns in schools and for young people. I think that's something that we kind of let drive our work here in Scotland also, because it's so few and far between in spaces that young people and anyone else inhabit, isn't it? So yeah, it sounds really encouraging. Sounds really, really cool. Now, to talk more about the No Police in Schools project, is something that caught our eye, because we have started talking with some of our allies that work on abolition work about the role of police in schools in Scotland. And we're wondering, okay, so like, what's the actual like reality of it? What does it look like? And lo and behold, after a freedom of information request done by the big teaching union here, the EIS, we found out that there are police officers in loads and loads of schools all across Glasgow and all across different schools all across Scotland for lots of different reasons, and funded by different streams, and their purpose isn't entirely clear. And I think the work that you were doing down in Manchester really caught our eye in the No Police in Schools project. And there was an example of people who have looked at this issue in detail and gone to the people who are affected to think about what to do next. So it'd be great to focus more on that now. Fosia, could you tell us a bit about what the project is and first, and like why it was formed in the first place? What's the purpose behind it?
Yeah, so it was in kind of summer, like March, it's time where it came to our attention that there was a Freedom of Information Act that stated that there will be 20 more police officers that will be added in kind of specific schools that were predominantly working class and kids of colour areas. And so Kids of Colour and the Northern Police Monitoring kind of came together to create this campaign of no policing schools. And because of it, there was a lot of young people beforehand, before this Freedom of Information Act stated this, that were this, there was this theme coming up where there was a lot of racism that these young kids were experiencing in schools, and then that there was a lot of policing in schools, and that they've had these quite extreme traumatic experiences with. So that's how it originally came into our attention in the beginning. And then the Freedom of Information Act added, stated that there'll be more police officers. And then so this campaign of no policing in schools started, basically, to try and kind of cancel this act that more police officers should be in schools, because there already were police officers and there have been so many issues. And then throughout the campaign, it became quite evident that a lot of people in the community were not aware of this, weren't aware of the police in schools, and that there will be more police in schools. Part of the campaign, we did a survey that we kind of branched out throughout the community with young people, with teachers, and a lot of information came up of what these kids were actually experiencing and what it was like, the reality was having police in schools. So that's kind of how it started. Just through kids coming through our platform, expressing their experiences. And then it kind of took a whole world around from there.
Mm-hmm. What can either of you tell us a bit more about what the relationship between the police and these young people that you were talking about is like already before the police walk into the school? Like what is a relationship like in their daily lived realities?
I think it's really tense with these young people. Like, a lot of these kids are being, some of these kids are being stopped and searched daily to and from school, which of course is extremely traumatic and scary, especially when we're aware about the way that police treat black and brown people, especially young black and brown people. So I think these kids are really fearful, and I think school's meant to be a place where they can feel safe, where they have the space to learn and explore their identity. And actually what we're finding is that these kids are being stifled and they're being over-policed out on the streets, and then they come into school and they're being over-policed again and stereotyped and being treated as criminals. Like straight off the bat. So it's really not a good situation. It's a really difficult thing for these young people to be dealing with.
Yeah, it sounds like it's the complete opposite of what school, as you say, should be. It should be a safe space, almost a sanctuary, perhaps. I think that's what I try to do as a teacher, to try and make a classroom a bit of a sanctuary away from the realities of life that some children might face outside. But with this great rise and just presence of police officers, as you say, there'd be no way to have that. So either of you tell us a bit more about what the police officers do, like what's their actual role in the school, what's the point of them being there, either in an official way or as in what people have actually reported.
So that is an interesting question, because that's one that kind of we all have, especially even like the community. Once they became aware of it, they were like, what is the purpose? And just to kind of go off what Maya was saying about the experiences these young kids were having, these police officers in schools don't get separate training to be in schools. So these are the same police officers that we see in the streets who, you know, do what they do out there, and you know, the experiences that we've seen throughout that Black and brown people have with police officers are then the same police officers that are put into these schools with these children and minors. So there is no kind of special training that they get, kind of childcare protection in their work. There's no actual official information or document that states what their role is in schools. It's not been passed on to the parents of these kids. We're not informed about it as organizations who support these children who have these experiences. So it's still kind of a question mark of what their official job role is in these school presence. It's the purpose for having police in schools is stated that it's for the protection of young people, to reduce youth violence is one big statement of the reasoning of police in schools. But those two main kind of explanations doesn't interlink with what's actually happening with them being there. So, but technically that's what they say they're there for.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's I think the kind of idea of tackling youth violence through over policing is something that we're seeing now kind of across the UK when it comes mm-hmm. to youth violence. It's kind of like this idea that kind of an increase in youth violence means more stop and search, more surveillance. But I think, I suppose what it would be interesting to know is if whether or not there seems to be more of a correlation in terms of when we're talking about youth violence, there's often this perception that it's more likely to be young Black boys compared to other ethnic groups. And it'd be interesting to see if that has been shown as a trend in terms of the campus policing. Is it found that there's more police officers that tend to be based in the schools that do have higher populations of like ethnic minority students?
Yeah, definitely. So schools with majority people of colour and also working class communities as well. And yeah, you're exactly right with that. I think there is this perception that youth violence goes hand in hand with being a young person of colour. And, you know, often one of the things that came up from the report is that in one specific school was that groups of young Black and brown people were being labelled as gangs if they were like together in the school. And it's just like those stereotypes are then what perpetuate the over policing, and then you get into the cycle where these kids are just being constantly over policed and then are feeling really fearful of their time in school and being around these officers. So yeah, it's definitely a correlation.
Yeah, and I think that I think when it does come to like what I found through just like looking into this kind of area and the kind of justifications for policing in schools is that like it's often not addressing those kind of root causes of violence maybe when they occur. So it's kind of like not really looking at the what could be the interventions for young people who are either victims of violence or perpetrators. And I suppose it's that kind of idea that over-policing is the kind of thing that will solve it, when we know that that's the evidence shows that that's absolutely not the case. And I think that like what we found as well with when it comes to looking at like funding streams for policing, you know, we're talking there about we don't really know what their purpose is. It's for me in my experience of what campus police officers in Scotland and their kind of purposes in schools is often seen as pastoral. So it could be like, you know, referring, working with third sector agencies and youth work agencies to support young people who are particularly vulnerable and that kind of thing. And that kind of justified the use of PEF funding that we have here, which is the Pupil Equity Fund, which is used for, really mainly used for closing the attainment gap, but also to support vulnerable young people. So that was something that was really surprising and really worrying, I think, when we came across that information around that use of funding for police in schools that should actually be used to support vulnerable young people and could be used in loads of other ways, like through youth work and other pastoral work that the schools can do for those young people. So yeah, I suppose it'd be quite interesting to see how, if there's been transparency in terms of the funding for policing in schools that you guys have found in Manchester, in terms of like where the funding is coming from, and if that is being made transparent.
With funding, I'm not entirely sure if there is like a specific organization that funds these particular like school-based police officers. From the knowledge that we have, it's governmental, unless it's anything different. So it comes from us. but it, this sort of pastoral kind of like, this is like, you know, if you're struggling, this is where you go to, seems to be very similar over here as well, which is also interesting because it seems like a very extreme jump for a child who might be struggling in school to then visit a police officer about that rather than maybe a counselor or a youth supporter or you know, a teaching assistant or, you know, people who work in these job settings for those purposes. And in parts of the survey for our report, one of the questions of whether or not people would want to have police in schools, and if not, where would they rather the money that's going to school-based police officers, where they would want it. And there was a large percentage that would rather have counseling support for young people, because mental health seems it's a big sort of want and need for young people, just for their well-being. There was a lot of people in the survey who would rather have youth supporters or teaching assistants. So there was a lot of percentages that went towards alternative support systems, and almost zero to none that would go and want school-based police officers, because it just didn't match for what they do to what these kids might need. So yeah, this kind of narrative that, you know, oh well, if a child needs help, you know, a police officer can help them, doesn't kind of match with what the community and young people think and feel. But yeah.
Yeah, I think it dovetails with one little bit that we saw in the Freedom of Information request about policing schools in Scotland, was that one of the expressed aims of having more police officers in schools was to improve that relationship between communities and the police. That if kids saw the police in school as a kind of positive, nurturing presence, then they would be more cooperative with police when it would come to other work that they do and everything else. And we know that, like, that has not been a positive experience for people of colour in this country forever. So trying to like mend this relationship when it comes to a really coercive institution, which we've seen doesn't really work in the best interest a lot of times for people of colour, it strikes me as like a complete, it's kind of outrageous to see that school time is being used for this, when there's so many other things that kids could be doing to, I don't know, nurture themselves and maybe learn amazing new things and do things which make them feel more accepted and perhaps work as something against any kind of violence that kids might be drawn into. But the priority has been seen as building this relationship, which we know doesn't actually like lead to anything. But it was interesting hearing a bit about the reception from people in the community towards your report. What about people in schools or people that work in schools and in like local government? Like, what have they been saying about it?
So the majority of people working in the community have, you know, have similar ideas. Just often the first question that they ask is, well, why do they have police and why are the police in school? Like, people are quite confused about it. The government, on the other hand, sticks to this idea that it's going to improve relations. You know, youth violence is always the two things that come up as top of their explanations for why. So it's a bit of a contrast. The people who are actually seeing these kids on a daily and have a proper understanding about their well-being and mental health don't agree with it. And the government, who are quite detached from these young people of colour and aren't actually experiencing and seeing the daily struggles that these young people of colour are having, are often for it. So I think it's really telling, to be fair.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And to kind of add to what Maya was saying, we also have the support of Manchester National Education Union District from the teachers community, which was great to have, you know, professionals who work in these environments and who are, you know, mostly with these young people, come forward and support the No Policing in Schools campaign. Some who weren't aware of kind of a lot of the experience young people were going through, and through the report have found out and have come forward to support it. Others who have kind of, you know, might have known through their conversations with their students. And so to have like such a big kind of teachers community come together and support the campaign was also great for the campaign, but also I feel like great for young people as well, to have their teachers and people that spend 90% of the time with them support them, and to kind of uplift the campaign some more as something that it's not just being vocalized by communities or young people or people like us from organizations, but also professionals who work in these spaces. But yes, like Maya said, government seems to be a different conversation. We have kind of put out open letters to Andy Burrough, you know, the Manchester MP, and we are still to sort of hear from him. But regardless, we aim to continue challenging these systems and supporting these kids, but there is a very difference of communication or lack thereof from, you know, communities to government.
Yeah, the priorities are completely different, and like it reminds me a lot, or reminds me a little bit of like Prevent and the way that Prevent has like crept into every kind of institution that we're a part of that's like linked to the state and also not, and that this kind of logic just becomes normal, like regardless of what people's experiences are, regardless of how negative like across the board it is, it seems to just like, well, with Prevent, after years of campaigning, it seems to just like be there as a kind of common sense thing. And it's really important and like great that yous are doing something before, I don't know, this new influx of officers come into schools, because it needs to just be stopped at the grassroots and stopped before it can ever become like a normal thing. And it'd be interesting to learn more about the history, because maybe police have been in schools for a lot longer than all of us think, maybe. But it seems like it's something that's kind of cropped up more recently. And I can't help but think that a lot of it must be linked to how little money schools have to do the jobs that they're meant to do. And I don't know, maybe there's a link between austerity and these kind of carceral logics and punitive systems becoming a bit more normal and like common sense. Yeah. What's the kind of like next steps now for the project? What is going to happen? What are your aims? What do these young people want to do? It'd be great to hear more about what's going to happen now.
So the aim is to just carry on with the work that we're doing. As Fosia said before, we had much response footing on the pressure. We're not planning on stopping that anytime soon. Additionally, just like arranging workshops for schools, for students, so that, you know, a message of anti-racism is kind of spreading and becoming ingrained in order to sort of like combat the racism that, you know, people of colour in general and students of colour are facing as well. Yeah, just to keep pushing on with stuff and keeping the platform strong in terms of knowing that people of colour can come to us and young people of colour can still use it as a platform to talk about their experiences.
Yeah, I think all the main points Maya stated. I think with the No Policing in Schools campaign, it will be continuing on sort of the work and going forward with the responses we've got from the community people and tackling those issues. And Kids of Colour has always been a space for young people of colour to prioritise young people of colour. So that will always continue. And then just kind of like outside work with other organisations or schools to kind of broaden the kind of conversation of racism and how to demolish it.
A good aim, yes. I think we all need to aim high and just tear down this entire terrible thing from the roots. And like, yeah, policing schools is got to be one kind of central, particularly ugly pillar of it. And yeah, it kind of boggles the mind to think that that's a normal thing. I know, Thingisa, you were interested in learning more about, I don't know, like practical aspects of like launching a campaign. Like, what were you thinking about that? What are your kind of thoughts?
Yeah, I suppose like in our kind of brief conversation that we had with you both last time, we kind of touched on like the similar challenges, I guess, that we're facing now, that you guys were kind of like, oh yeah, it was the exact same stuff that we were facing kind of back when we started our campaign. And just even despite the kind of geographical differences, I think we found that there were still very much kind of similar challenges. What I've kind of found challenging, I guess, is like I think it's amazing is about how you guys have got all this information from the young people through the kind of reports and stuff. But I suppose in terms of getting a group of young people who have had perhaps negative experiences of campus policing in schools together and talking about it, I suppose is where it's perhaps more of a challenge for us. I don't know if that's to do with the demographic differences. I suppose there's less, you know, BME young people overall in Glasgow, Scotland compared to down south. But I guess like I think having like that kind of collective of kids of colour initially has probably supported you guys with that sort of initial consultation stuff. So yeah, maybe it'd be good to get some tips on like how to engage young people from that sort of level of just talking about their experiences, coming forward about their experiences of racism and particularly of campus policing. And I guess how to start those conversations.
So initially, because Kids of Colour has always been kind of a space for young people, Roxy kind of built relationships with young people where there was just a conversation of racism and how they're feeling and what challenges they go through. And then from that kind of interactions that she's had with young people, it soon became word of mouth, I think, because there was, I mean, I can't really think of any other space where there was this open dialogue from a person of colour who wanted to hear your experience and to validate your experience. I think because of that, people, you know, we just started being like, oh, there's this woman called Roxy and, you know, you can talk to her. And I think throughout that, it just kind of grew that there was this space to come to as a young person to talk, and that's how the YouTube videos started to kind of come into existence. And then when the No Policing in School campaign started, Kids of Colour at this point has existed almost 2 years, so there's been a foundation. So that's kind of how it started. It really just started with having a conversation with a young person and creating that space for them to speak openly, to speak in an environment where they're not dismissed or shamed or invalidated because of how they're feeling. And I think Roxy did an amazing job of creating that space by being supportive and listening, and then giving them a platform to vocalize this, where it could be public so people can kind of hear and see what's actually happening and how what the experiences of young people of colour are in Manchester when it comes to racism. And then that's kind of like the foundation, and then you kind of it quickly formed into events and spaces as well. And so when Roxy created these events of different topics, mental health, education, policing, there was always like young people and then like two professionals in that field that would talk about it. And young people would be talking about their experiences in these event spaces, but there was a lot of then audience interaction, and then through that, those kind of events became like more conversation, and the community got involved. You would hear parents talk about the difficulties that they had faced because of the struggles their kids were facing in schools, and then you would hear the older generations talk about their experiences from the 60s and 70s, and then really kind of see like a human history of like not much has changed. So I think, I don't know if I went off the topic, but like it's kind of like starts off with young people, and then really I think events really kind of threw it off after that, and seeing the community come together.
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, like, I was going to say as well, just like creating a space on social media. Like obviously a lot of young people are quite active on social media, so that's what we've seen. We've seen more often now people getting contact on like Instagram and Twitter, and that's a massive part of the word of mouth thing, is that that's how things spread. And obviously if you don't have, like you said, there's maybe more of an issue of diversity in Glasgow, that's how I guess you're going to find it easier to come in contact with people of colour. If they're not in physical like proximity, you'll be able to reach out to them online. So I guess maybe making like a very strong online presence on social media, I think that would really like push things along.
Brilliant.
It's such a great set of tips, and it's so cool to hear the kind of work that you're doing. I was listening to another podcast today with Gary Young on Surviving Society. It's another great podcast if anyone's got the time to listen to it. He was talking about the importance in anti-racist activism, and that like it seems this country is going further and further down the racist rabbit hole right now, that it's so important to kind of build intergenerational bonds, because older people have got really important experience to share, and young people have got equally like valuable experiences and stories to kind of bring together. And it's amazing to hear that Kids of Colour has been able to make a space in which people from these different viewpoints, who are all racialized, can come together and come to a greater understanding of what the problem is. And then obviously in this campaign, make some concrete steps towards fighting it and creating a kind of legacy. And that, yeah, you have this report right now, it's a physical thing, and like people like us in Scotland can read from it and learn from it. And I'm sure people in Manchester and other parts of England will continue to see the work that you're doing and learn some really important lessons about what, yeah, young people's, racialized young people's lives should be. It was really great. Thank you so much. I think that's just about our time. Fosia and Maya and Sangeeta. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Having you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was a great conversation.
Yeah, it really was.
Brilliant to hear from you guys. And I think that, as well, just to echo what Hashim was saying, like, I think that it's amazing that you've gathered these stories. And I think that if, when it comes to, like, especially working with young people on a campaign like this, it is going to be their stories and their experiences that can make the biggest impact. Mm-hmm. And for me, definitely when reading through the report, it was those anecdotal experiences, those direct, I suppose, words from them that kind of really did shine through, like the kind of how important the work is when it comes to this. So yeah, thank you so much for what you guys are doing, and yeah, it's a great inspiration for our campaign as well.
Thank you. Maya, if people want to find out more about the campaign and Kids of Colour, where can they find out more?
So you can get in contact on through Instagram, or just keep up with us. It's just Kids of Colour, at Kids of Colour. Same for Twitter. We also have a general email that you can use if you like are interested in sharing your stories or just getting a bit of help. We have a website, also the No Police in Schools. There's a load of really, really good resources on there if anyone is struggling with sort of the racism that they're dealing with in the school. So nopoliceinschools.co.uk as well. Yeah, I think that's all of them.
Yeah, and both websites look really nice, by the way. I think the Kids of Colour website, it looks really swish. It's cool. It's cool.
Awesome.
Also, we can get an Instagram for our group, because it seems like Insta's doing amazing things for you. Yeah. Incredible.
100%.
No, honestly, yeah, because it really, it's something as simple as a DM is kind of like blows up very quickly, so online is the way.
Sending more of those. Yeah, have our inbox ready. So
yeah,
thanks so much, everybody. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Stay tuned for more podcasts coming out soon, and till next time, see you later. Bye. Young kings and queens to believe their greatness, fill up police stations. I be berating because will I be mistaken just because I be debated while these slipedos raping. Big man like you, rogues in a big boy black suit and a gangster platoon. What's a man supposed to do?
We've complained to the police about the police and nothing's been done. We've complained to judges about judges and nothing's been done. Now it's time to do something ourselves. In love and war.